Hello, hello, hello. My name's Pope. Hello, hello, hello. Drinking Diet Coke. So that's not a paid endorsement, but if Diet Coke want to send me over some of their sweet, sweet elixir that tastes like battery acid, but I like it, then please send it over to me. My ex-girlfriend actually gave me a tree, a Christmas tree ornament that was a big sparkly can of Diet Coke, which I buried deep down into the bottom drawer when she left me, so not to reminisce or think about her face in any way. She's dead to me. Anyway, so today we're going to be talking about a few different things. First of all, I want to thank the Stand Comedy Club, as they are leading by example when it comes to tackling the current wave of Me Too within our industry, within the comedy industry. And there was performers appearing at one of the country's best known comedy clubs, which is the Stand in Glasgow, Newcastle and Edinburgh, just the best comedy clubs, both to go to and to perform at. Incredible. I loved every second of performing all of their clubs. We have to agree to new anti-harassment guidelines following a Me Too backlash against predatory behaviour on the circuit. The Stand, which operates in Edinburgh, Glasgow and Newcastle, is taking action after becoming deeply concerned by reports of unacceptable male behaviour. And I think I've talked about this a couple of times on this podcast, but when I did a talk, I was invited to do a talk, What's Next? A Dorset chapter, very, very lovely, hospitable group that was. They very kindly asked me to talk at the group about being a stand-up comedian and about the Live Comedy Association. I said, I've been doing stand-up for 4 years. I went full-time at the beginning of 2019, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm actually very new to comedy, very green, really. But one benefit is that this gives me an ability to envisage renovation rather than being staid and purist or stubbornly resistant to change. There's a profusion of testimonials from women all across the comedy industry. This wasn't opportunism, which some people say. This was a collective purging of latent trauma. This was women saying, I'm fucking sick of this shit and it can't carry on. And even if the LCA isn't for some people, weren't they dispirited by these testimonials? Didn't they rack their brain for ways to remedy it? Now, we're all part of an industry because we have a deep abiding love of comedy. And for me, seeing that collective purging from female acts who have found a lot of it to be unwelcoming was fucking gutting, mate. I even included the mate in my written script. Just to make me a bit more like the common man. Hello, my matey, chip on your shoulder, chop chop. Wanna flop me to flop my old cock and balls? Not the time. It's one thing you need to learn, right? You need to learn decorum. Part of decorum is knowing when the time and place to flop your cock and balls out. And now is not the time. Listen to the words. Listen to the words. That'll give you a hint. Now's not the time. He learned his lesson. He's gone off. So if we're going to save this thing we love, we also need to improve it. And it's a perfect opportunity. That's why the LCA, who are mentioned in the article in the Nine Times newspaper, the LCA is drawing up its own code of conduct for members after claiming that the circuit had a systemic problem. It also plans to provide counseling for victims of harassment, which isn't. That's a bit of a misrepresentation of what we're doing there. But I mean, it's a task force where it's all female task force. They'll be providing templates for grievance procedures and codes of conduct to different clubs and venues, for that club and venue to implement their own sort of grievance procedures when it comes to this. We'll be there to guide them, to give them best practice. And also, it'll be a group of females who will, you know, treat every thing that comes to them with the utmost seriousness and compassion, and be able to provide the resources and the information that they need so that the people coming forward can make up their mind about how they want to proceed. Anyway, get that stuff over and done with. Don't want to be seen to speaking on behalf of DLC as well. I spoke about flopping Mel Cockle out. Probably not a good... Shouldn't talk about that and then segue into something that's actually very, very serious. My dad had to... So my dad got called round and had to try and help someone stand back from the brink of suicide. And it's not funny. It's, oh, poor fucker. It's someone that my dad barely knows, who is an acquaintance. I mean, I spoke to my dad about it the next day and asked him what transpired. So he had to spend a night trying to talk this guy down from killing himself. When I asked him what happened, he said, I didn't really know what to say. So every time he started crying, I'd go to the kitchen to make him a glass of squash. They wouldn't drink them. So it's just me and him in the lounge, surrounded by glasses of squash. What else are you supposed to do in a situation like that, really? What else are you supposed to do? Also, if you're a squash lover, if you love squash, you now know what to do. The only downside is you might have to follow through with a suicide so people take you seriously. At least you've demonstrated your commitment to squash. No one can accuse you of being a liar. That's for sure. And also, I was thinking about how sometimes the most seemingly innocuous messages can be a bigger sign or a bigger indication of deteriorating mental health than visible cuts up someone's forearms. Like when I was young, a guy sent me, I was about 13, and a guy sent me a link to his Flickr account. Shows you how long ago that was. I don't even know if it exists anymore. And it was just 280 close-up photos of his forehead. Just close-up shots of his red, bulging forehead. And I thought, this man is incredibly dangerous. And the Myra Hindley tattoo in the centre of his forehead had very little to do with it, to be honest. Had very little. That's a bit of material I've been working on. I was trying to think of alternatives. Initially, I said swastika. I thought swastika is quite this bit easy, a bit cheap. So I did a list of alternatives of what he can have as a tattoo in the middle of his forehead. By the way, the man sending me photos of his forehead is actually 100% true, but not having a tattoo in the middle of it. Which is even creepier. And the alternatives I had to swastika were the tattoo of Myra Hindley, or the Myra Hindley tattoo. Is that the one I just used? Yeah, that's the one I used, wasn't it? The tattoo of the Hindenburg disaster, the tattoo of his dead mum, the tattoo of a botched circumcision, which was my favourite, but a bit too weird, the Jackie Stallone tattoo, or the tattoo of Jackie Stallone. And the fact he had the words dead mum tattooed on his forehead had very little to do with it. So just the words dead mum. And the fact he had the words the Iraq war tattooed on the centre of his forehead had very little to do with it. So the words the Iraq war. And the fact he had the word fuck peace tattooed on his forehead had very little to do with it. I actually read fuck peas, but I knew what he was going for. Unless the dad who walked out on him and his mum was the Jolly Green Giant. Bum, bum, bum. Not mine. Yeah. It's not great. It's not great. It's not there yet. It's one of those things that tries... That's going to take a bit of time to bounce off of, but... any suggestions for what tattoos could be in the center of the forehead, please, at the Daily Bumbler on Twitter, chuck them over. And if there is actually a good one, I will pay you £5 to use it. And I've done that before. I've paid £5 to quite a few people for just about four different bits of someone else's that I've used. That actually elaborated on the premise that I'd already set up, but it was a really good, what do they call it? Kicker. Is it kicker? So I recently did an interview with the Royal College of Nursing, and it's going to come out soon. But because they're limited in the amount of words that they can use, and I mean they caught me at a manic moment because I had sent them back a fucking thesis. But the lovely lady that I've been talking to, she's a lovely woman. I was actually, that was an interesting thing. So when Frankie Boyle said about the Queen's vagina, the Queen's pussy being haunted, David Davies, the Tory MP, was quoted as saying it was a disgracefully foul comment to make about any lady. And Davies' defence, this is from the book Comedy and the Politics of Representation. David Davies' defence of the Queen suggests that her public persona does not detract from her rights as a woman not to be subject of sexist abuse, which is absolutely fair. However, David Davies' choice of the term lady demonstrates how easy it is for condemnation of misogynistic joking to slip into quasi-chivalric, outdated terminology that re-articulates gendered power inequalities. That's what can happen. I think this is very apt, very pertinent to this current moment of protecting women from different kinds of abuse, as we saw with the Stan's implementation of a code of conduct. How some people will argue that it's sort of leads to the neotenization of females, or the infantilism of females. And again, it positions the men as the people who have to swoop in and safeguard these poor, delicate porcelain women. That's not an argument. I'm gonna be like, hey, I'm just asking the question. It's gonna be one of those guys. I don't believe it. I'm just putting it out there. Just a guy standing over here looking at a bird, asking her some tits. I mean, questions. That's what they're doing. They can't implement this stuff themselves. They're just too busy sucking their own tits. That's what they do, innit? Just noshing off your own tits. I'm doing the belt. Just noshing off their own tits, innit? That's all they do. Fingering a pillow. That's all they do. As I'm over here doing Warhammer. Scrap metal collecting. Scaffolding sandwich. Got a scaffolding sandwich, mate. Probably better with a baguette. Fits in nicely, nice and snug. Flight of fancy. I'm going to read out the full interview for the Royal College of Nursing. What was they probably use a tarp as a like a dressing for that sandwich. So what was your experience of care work before moving into comedy? Did you like it? Prior to going full-time as a comedian, I worked in elderly care for 8.5 years. And yeah, I got a hell of a lot out of it. Big part of my job is the effort to understand and to feel the experiences of those who are aged and vulnerable. I love that. There's also some overlap. A comedian's main skill is how to effectively utilize communication. And when you're speaking to people who have neurodegenerative diseases, who are trying to navigate their way through a drunken world with tectonic shifts, the ability to use communication to help mitigate fear or anxiety is absolutely vital. Another thing that I think is vital as well, when it comes to the assessment of value for, this was insane actually, was reading about factory work, but that's the problem, is care work is treated in the same way as factory work, as a type of labor. And I want to sort of break asunder the rigid standardization of factory labor or elderly care labor or care labor in favor of extended co-determination, which is cooperation between management and labor. But that is the facades, this idea of supporting and each other and cooperating between the different tiers of the workforce. But I also want to encourage the lowly carers and the residents to be unruly and subjectively slanted so that the residents can't be neatly slotted together like industrial piping into the structure of the day. Be a refusenik. That's what I hate, is that that's when it leads to institutionalization. When these people that you are caring for are no longer treated as human beings, they're treated as a task or a material that you're working with, the clay of labor, rather than a human being. Hate that. Really annoys me when people die and they become really task orientated, and like they strip these people and wash them and tuck them in like they're fucking, like some resident family referred to it as coddling a pebble, which is, you know, cruel, but that's how it's the dehumanizing part of elderly care. People have to shake themselves out of that. They can't become complacent and fall into that mindset of just seeing each of the residents as something to work around rather than to cooperate and work with. When comedy gigs were cancelled and you started considering other work, why did you choose to go back to care work? I'd already combined my experiences doing care work with my career as a comedian in two ways. A, I'd relay anecdotes from my time as a care assistant on stage, whether it's initiating a minor coup d'etat with some of the residents, clients, the selfish thoughts you have while observing a drawn-out cessation, or forging a deep bond with a 98-year-old who called me a fat slut. B, I created the care home tour, which The Guardian said, a comedian's taking slapstick into new territory, when The Guardian wrote a nice article about that, to provide antic physical comedy for those living with dementia. So the two were inextricably bound. All I want to do with my life is perform, write, read, and do care work. Even when I'm back to comedy full time and become a real success, it's going to happen. You mark my words. And if it doesn't, and then no one really is probably listening to this anyway, so it's like a fart in the wind. I can't be held to account. No one's going to look back on this, use it as evidence that I didn't make it. And if they do, I'll be such a low status figure that I can just go, you're bullying. You're doing a bully me. You're bullying my head off. You're bullying my head off, mate. So in this court of law, you've brought this to us today. What are the charges, Mr. Lonergan? Want to use the correct vernacular. Today, I charge them with bullying my head off. Bullying my head off, yeah. That's right. Pop the old head off with the bullying. Like when Andy Kaufman still worked as a waiter while on the show Taxi, which is probably a bit of self-mythologizing there. Like, I learned today about Jean-Michel Basquiat, who incredible. I love Jean-Michel Basquiat. But there is a sort of the dysfunction of foundational myths, and that Basquiat had created this myth around himself of being a pure dyed-in-the-wool street kid. And he was a teen runaway who slept on benches in Tompkins Square Park. But he's also like a handsome, privileged boy from a Park Slope brownstone who'd gone to private school, followed by a stint at City of School, a destination for gifted children. And him and his mum frequently went to museums and stuff like that. So he was he had an elite background. This is something that a lot of comedians, and there's two particular comedians I know who absolutely have made their name on being working class comedians. Well, one went to private school and one has very wealthy parents who are able to lay down the financial foundations for their success, which is I don't give a shit where anyone's background is. It's nice to have a bit of transparency, isn't it? Especially if they're talking about there being limited places for working class people especially within TV and radio, within comedy. And I know this person has spoken about that before. And they're occupying them spaces while embellishing their working class credentials. So I love this back to interview. I love chatting to people banging on about something or other. And three of those, performing, writing, and care work, provide you with the opportunity to do that. I remember during the Brexit referendum, I was running around the care home providing manic updates to people who still thought Harold Wilson was in charge. Also, I was going to sign up for Job Seekers Allowance or Universal Credit. Haven't signed on since 2012. Thought it'd be fun to get the old gang back together again. And the old gang is actually me and the work coach who said I don't need to fill out my work diary like an actual diary because, in his words, feelings aren't really a part of this. Or accompanying drawings. Or what you've had for dinner. Luckily, I applied for the new job and my DBS cleared before I was completely broke. What work did you come back to, including your job title and the type of area you are working in? I've gone back to being a part-time care assistant for an agency. So I'm mainly working with people who are disabled or have learning difficulties. I've managed to monetize a bit of online comedy stuff and then other bits and pieces, which I'll elaborate on a bit further down the line. In what ways had the pandemic changed things in the workplace? For example, extra precautions, PPE, communication through clients, fear, concern. Obviously, wearing masks at all time is a bit of a change. It's like wearing a grazing muzzle full of, if you've been on a 14-hour shift, bad breath. But the clients seem to have acclimated to the new normal, though I only met them in this sort of post-lapsarian moments. So I have nothing to compare it to. I know the management are really hot on testing. I have to sign documentation each time I do a shift to notify them that I haven't got any symptoms or when I was last tested. Just to make a larger point about the handling of the pandemic, especially when it comes to both care homes and the elderly, I've been deeply frustrated with the compassion deficit from both our government and the population at large, with the view that these people are a strata of society that can be sloughed off the top. Why wouldn't we use this as an opportunity to compress the margins of society and check in with the elderly, the disadvantaged, and the disabled? I've seen commentators, people who consider themselves clear-eyed rationalists, argue that we should relieve the treasury of the burden of social care and think of the pandemic as a cleansing virus that will relieve the body politic of its weaker members. You'll always be able to revive an economy, but you won't be able to revive a human being. And I'll never forgive those who are arguing that the widespread death is preferable to economic depression. Fuck those people. What were the main challenges? I'll fight them in car parks, mate. I'll fight you in a car park. That's how I'm calling out. Anyone who's done that, I call you out, mate. Let's go toe-to-toe on knowledge about worms in a car park. Have a worm off in a car park, mate. You come with your five best worm facts, I'll come with mine, and let's see who's got the biggest worm knowledge. What were the main challenges? Getting to know clients' routines and preferences. For 8.5 years, I was in the same care home, so the people I cared for were like an extension of my family. I was so embedded in their lives and considered such a permanence that when they called me out for me, and I wasn't on shift, and they were told I wasn't working today, they'd reply, "Don't be silly, dear. Pope's always here." But it's also exciting to develop new relationships with these people. There's a guy who's my age, but he has learning difficulties and problems with mobility due to meningitis. I do one-to-one care of him. He's still very independent in a lot of ways and only requires his one-to-one care in the evening. I think it's important to permit small acts of rebellion that aren't detrimental to the welfare of other clients or staff. And because he's 30 years old and full of piss and vinegar, he wants to bomb around in his wheelchair and be a bit boisterous. But a lot of the other carers are older and female, so they have a more maternal, matriarchal relationship with him and will strain his more energetic impulses. Personally, I want the people I care for to have the freedom to experience the full spectrum of human emotion. So, as a male who's the same age as him, I'll indulge this and will go on a controlled rampage. I'm laughing while I type because I know this must read, but I promise you we're not endangering anyone. We're just throwing around foam balls or foam noodles, so it expends a lot of energy before bed. He cries with laughter. How can you deprive someone of that? A couple of lads going mad with their balls. What positives came out of it? I'll sort of cover that in the one above. It's quite long. I'll read the rest of it in the next podcast, not to go over, but I did slip a bit of a joke in there, which she has not published. Might actually try and convince her again if she can. Question was, are there any similarities in care work to the stand-up circuit? Answer, there's a lot of stubborn old men with dementia who keep getting in the way. Aha! And that's it. You've got to try and push back on these people who lean against the door. I think that was actually in one of the articles I was reading about Basquiat. There's a good quote about that. Can't remember what it was. So I'm just trying to find it. Yeah, just saying about people. People leaning on the door and you bullying their head off, something like that. All right, laters.